All right, so we finished up last week talking about the beast that came up out of the sea, the tyrannical government that is wreaking havoc on the planet. And we noticed that as we were looking at this, that this could be taken a couple different ways. This could be the recurring tyrannical governments that all invariably always show up, that make their presence known, that are there to persecute the true church, to stifle the progress of the gospel. And we can see through history that is definitely the case. One tyrannical government after another. When you think one's gone, another one shows up. And that could be part of the concept behind the wound that's given to the beast and it resurrects from it. But there also seems to be something a bit more specific involved here. And like I said, when it comes to these types of prophecies, being able to be really specific in the interpretation of them is next to impossible, I think. They're apocalyptic in nature. The language is written in a highly symbolic form, so it's very difficult. And if the people in the first century really struggled to get some of the clear prophecies of the Messiah, we're certainly going to struggle a little bit with some of the apocalyptic stuff, I think. The point is not to have a specific thing attached to every aspect of this, but to understand what the purpose of these things are. The purpose is for us to understand that things look one way on earth, but in heaven they're completely different. And we need to make sure that we're persevering to the end, no matter what it looks like on this planet. We push forward, we push through, we stay faithful, because in the end, all of these things are going to work out. All of these enemies are going to be defeated. That's the main thrust. Throughout every generation, that encouragement can be taken away, no matter what the situation is. That being said, it seems like there's something possibly a little bit more specific here. We went to Daniel chapter 7 last week, looked at the 10 horns that come up out of the fourth beast and the little horn that supplants three horns, and how that little horn is there to make war and overcome the saints. Very similar to what's written here in chapter 13, which seems to be a little bit more of a specific thing that is taking place. My opinion, and that's all it is, my opinion is that specifically with Daniel 7, which again relates to Revelation 13, is that there probably will be one last great persecutor of the church. And that makes sense, doesn't it? It makes sense that Satan recognizes his time is short, and even though he knows it means his destruction, if he can overcome the church, if he can overcome the saints and create a worldwide system that persecutes the body of Christ where it's not effective, it can't proceed forward, and that he can receive direct worship, man, he'll do that, even if he knows it brings about his season of the end. So I think that could be the overlay of what's going on here. Oh, and the last thing, I definitely wanted to mention this, specifically verses 9 and 10. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is destined to captivity he goes. If anyone kills with the sword he must be killed. Here is the perseverance in the faith of the saints. We looked at the manuscript evidence on a variant reading on the second half of that, which is, if anyone kills with the sword he must be killed. There's some decent manuscript evidence. It's not as strong as the manuscript evidence for what is written down. So I think what is written down in the book of Revelation, chapter 13, verse 10, is, in most Bibles, is what the reading is. But the variant reading is, if anyone is to be killed with the sword he must be killed. ESV has that. Okay, interesting. ESV has that. NIV has that too? Okay, as a footnote or as the reading? Interesting, interesting. So the majority manuscript has, if anyone kills with the sword he must be killed. Yeah, the vast majority of Greek manuscripts have that as the reading. There's only a little bit that has the reading that the NIV and the ESV have in there. That's interesting. I didn't know that that was the reading that they had. To me, it looks like it's two sides of the coin, right? Where you have, if anyone is destined for captivity, to captivity he goes. In other words, If you're going to end up going to captivity, that's exactly what's going to happen to you. We can sit here and wring our hands and try to stop things. But what's interesting, if God has a plan for us, the very things we do to try to maybe stop that plan actually cause the plan to take place. Satan tries to destroy the church, and what ends up happening? It destroys him. Right? It's like God has a plan. What if, and we looked at Peter, right? What if with Peter, and Jesus tells Peter exactly what kind of death he's going to die at the end of John, right? What if Peter's like, man, I'm going to try to get away from that as much as I can. And by getting away from it, he would actually end up causing it to happen because Jesus said that's what's going to happen to you. Right? There's no sense trying to get out of what we might be destined for. God has a purpose for us. He's got a plan for us. He's got a role for us to play. No matter what we do, that role is going to take place. Unless we just decide to scrap everything, right? But the bottom line is we don't need to wring our hands over the future. I'm not saying we don't do the things that we're supposed to do. We are supposed to do the things that we're supposed to do. But what's going to happen to us according to God's plan, God's will, God's purpose? That's what's going to end up happening. And so with the killing of the sword, you've got two different aspects here. One, you've got, if anyone kills with the sword, he must be killed. In other words, you've got these people out there that are doing bad things, government that's doing bad things. God's going to judge them for it. That's the point that he's making. The other point is, if we're looking at the ESV and the NIV reading, if your purpose is to be a martyr, that's what you're going to be. That's what you're going to be. Again, Peter is a great example of that. Jesus told him before he ascended, you're going to die. You're going to be killed for the faith. And what happened? It's exactly that. And John wasn't. John wasn't. He died a natural death according to the scriptures. According to tradition. He died a natural death. So what's really interesting with that whole thing is that it turned out exactly the way it was supposed to, and no amount of action or changes on the people's behalf changed that concept. So, and notice how he says there at the end of verse 10, here is the perseverance and the faith of the saints. In other words, this, you want to know how you persevere, you want to know how you keep faith in the face of violent persecution, you recognize God's in control, it's going to happen exactly the way it's supposed to. That's right, isn't it? That takes a load off to a certain extent, doesn't it? It's like, what if I do something wrong? What if I don't act appropriately? Or what if I make the wrong decision? It's already baked in the math, y'all. It's already baked into the math. Our job simply is to make sure that we're pushing forward and that we are doing what we're supposed to do. Staying perseverant, staying faithful. Questions or comments on that before we move on? All right, let's keep going. Let's talk about new stuff today. So Revelation 13, we're going to read 11 through the end of the chapter. We'll see how far we get. It says, then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth. And he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose fatal wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. And it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many who do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And he causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor and the freemen and the slaves, to be given a mark on their forehead or on their hand or on their forehead. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here's the wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of man, and his number is 666. Oh man, now we're getting into it, aren't we? We're getting into the good stuff. The mark of the beast, right? I think a lot of this is fairly straightforward. Some of it, of course, when we're getting into specifics, we aren't going to have an idea of what it's talking about, right? But let's look at verse 11. He says, then I saw another beast come up out of the earth, and he had two horns like that of a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. Now, this makes a lot of sense, right? So we've got the beast out of the sea, tyrannical government. Now we have the beast out of the earth. And notice, it's coming up out of the earth. It's of this creation. It's fleshly. It's from man. And that's going to become important as we look forward. This beast is not coming down out of heaven. It's not coming from the spiritual realm. It's coming up out of the earth. It is of this creation, not from God. Now, that's going to be really important as we get toward the end of this chapter. Well, what does he look like? We don't really know anything about what he looks like, except for two things. He has two horns like a lamb. So he's specifically drawing a comparison back to the lamb, back to Christ. But there's one key difference. What's the key difference? Speaks like a dragon. In other words, it looks like the lamb. It talks like the dragon. When you look at religion, when you look at Christianity, when you look at the faiths of the world, sometimes they might look holy. Sometimes they might look like what you would expect religion to look like. You know, big cathedrals or mosques or temples with, you know, pomp and circumstance and incense and ritual and all of these types, just like the Old Testament, right? All the different trappings. And if you think about it, a lot of the stuff that masquerades as religion today is based on a lot of the Old Testament stuff. And you think, how do I tell the difference? How do I know what's right and what's wrong? The words that come out of the mouth. It's how you tell the difference with all of this. The words that come out of the mouth. If you got somebody standing up front and it's got all the trappings of religion and what we think faith might look like, and yet they say, did God really say? Well, that's a good indication. So how are we going to know whether or not that religion, that faith, that semblance of Christianity or whatever that religion is actually from God or not? We're going to have to know what God said. This is going to go really hand in hand with what we're talking about next hour, about not being tossed by waves and trickery and being captive to faulty philosophy and deception. Knowing what the scripture says, understanding the tenets of true Christianity, is the primary way that we're going to be able to stand firm against the two-horned beast that speaks like a dragon. No other way. See, the characteristics of the lamb are on the outside, the speech of the dragon is on the inside. What's interesting is that he speaks from the dragon, but because that's where he gets his information. That's where he gets his doctrine from. Let's go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 11 for a second. Let's go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And let's look at verses 12 through 15. He says, "But what I am doing, I will continue to do so that I may cut off opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the matter about which they are boasting. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. No wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end will be according to their deeds." Notice, this isn't a new thing. We see this all the way in the Old Testament. Remember what Jeroboam did? Set up the calves in Bethel and Dan and had his own system and had his own priesthood and sacrifices. Counterfeit. And you can end up telling that because of what came out of their mouths. Same way here. Satan is an angel of light. His servants are going to look like an angel of light. The way you always determine is by what comes out of the mouth. Now back to Revelation 13. Let's look at verse 12. Says he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose fatal wound was healed. Now notice it says he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. Now, Brian, how does NIV read there where I say in his presence? He exercises the authority of the first beast in his presence. How does NIV read there? On his behalf. Diane, what does ESV read there? Verse 12. In his presence. Okay, so on his behalf, in his presence. It has that connotation of before him. So in other words, what's being shown here probably indicates at least one of two things. They're either working together, or more than likely, it means that the second beast is operating under the authority of the first beast. So what we're really seeing here, this is state-run religion for the purpose of oppression. Have we ever seen that on the face of the earth? See, that's what I'm saying. It's like, this stuff repeats, doesn't it? This stuff has happened and it repeats. You know, during the revolution, the communist revolution in the Soviet Union, the Russian Orthodox priests that didn't get on board were purged. And the Russian Orthodox Church became an arm of the state to inform on the state of any dissidents or anybody that didn't toe the party line. Roman Catholic Church? Did it persecute people that didn't agree with it? Church of England? Why does this country exist? It's primarily for religious freedom. What was interesting, though, is that when people came here for religious freedom, it was only for their group. And if you had dissident groups inside those places in America before we actually became a country, they would persecute those people, too. Crazy. Which is why the Bill of Rights that we have exists. To give that blanket freedom for every single person who wants it. And the government has no control over the exercise of your Christian faith. You can serve the Lord as you see fit. What'd you say, Dale?
So far,
right. But we see where that's being infringed upon. My point is, we see Revelation 13, 12 exercised throughout history. But again, if this is talking about it being ramped up at the end, well, that makes sense too. Right? And not to beat the horse too much, we see the things being put into place to make it so that what we're doing here is easily found out, easily tracked, and easily stopped. So my point is, we know this. We don't need necessarily specifics on it. We don't need God to necessarily map out every aspect of the future that's going to take place. We look at history, we see when government gets control of religion, bad things happen. Which is why America is the way that it is. And when America came about, the gospel was restored and went to the ends of the earth. Because that's what happens when people have religious freedom. They're able to get into the scriptures, find the truth, and send that truth on its way. Now, notice what the second beast's job is. He speaks as a dragon. He has all this authority. Notice what it says there in the middle of verse 12. And he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose fatal wound was healed. It's all about worship. I mean, we only have three temptations of Christ that are by Satan directly that are recorded. And one of them is, worship me. And I'll give you a shortcut that you don't have to go through the cross. All the nations, I'll give them to you, man. I'll give you all the kingdoms. Just worship me. I wonder what he was feeling at that particular point. I mean, this is all he's wanted. And so the second beast gives the first beast, who looks like the dragon, has all the authority of the dragon, gets people to worship him. And so through the proxy, the dragon gets worshipped. Because he's the one that gives the first beast the authority. So remember what worship actually is talking about. It's talking about submission. Are we supposed to submit to the government? Yep, that's what God says. But not like this. This type of submission is reserved for God only. So anytime there's a government that requires the type of submission that only belongs to God and infringes on what God says to do for the Christian, the Christian's duty is to rebel against that. We don't go looking for ways to rebel. We look for ways to accomplish both. But a lot of times, it's not possible. You can see that through history. A lot of times, it's not possible. And if it's not possible, even though we've given every effort to try to meet our duty to the government and meet our duty to the Lord, if there's just no way around it, God requires first and primary obedience always. Now, let's move on to verse 13 because it gets even more interesting. Any questions so far? Okay. Verse 13. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of all. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image of the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. So here we see miracles being done, calling fire down out of heaven. And in the Old Testament, that was a God thing, wasn't it? It reminds me of Mount Carmel, of Elijah. One God could call down fire from heaven. That was the test, wasn't it? If fire came down from heaven, that had to be God. We see it several times in the Old Testament. But the one on Mount Carmel is probably the most famous and most applicable to what it is that we're talking about here. Now this false prophet, this beast out of the earth, is able to do God-like miracles, do signs that amaze people, to deceive them to worship the first beast. Now, I don't know what that looks like and how that gets fulfilled. I don't. Catholicism has some interesting history of signs and wonders. A lot of it seems kind of sleight of hand, mass hysteria, kind of a thing. But some of them, it's like, it's interesting. Like, I think it's the Our Lady of Fatima, whatever it is, where all of these people saw a vision of the Virgin Mary. Like, there's a lot of people there, and they all saw her, apparently, all together. There's stuff like that. That takes place. She appeared in the sky, in the sun. It was interesting. It's been a while since I read it, so I don't remember the details of it. But this seems to be like legit miracles. So I don't know. I mean, is Satan going to be given a season where he can do those kinds of things at the end and give that authority to some false religion so that there's some serious bona fide miracles going around in order to deceive people? That's why you don't look at miracles, man. You don't. It's like if you have all these people, these Pentecostals out there doing supposed miracles and are telling people to pray Jesus into their heart, they're speaking like a dragon. So that tells you if they're actually doing miracles, where the source of their power is. Because I guarantee you something. And this might, you know, and a lot of people would think this is narrow and dogmatic, but you know what? We know what the scripture says, and we have to stand on it. I'll tell you this much, is that if you've got somebody that's doing miracles and they're telling people how not to be saved, one of the first things God would do is tell them, you're preaching the wrong plan of salvation, you need to get this straight. But that never happens, does it? They just continue spewing the same dragony stuff that comes out of their mouth. This is where I think it gets really interesting, though. If we look at verse 14, again, where it says, He deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image of the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. So now we're diving into like Daniel territory, aren't we? We're pulling in all this Old Testament imagery. Now we've got an image of the beast that was killed and was brought back to life. An idol. Now, what's the purpose of this? Well, let's look. Look at verse 15. And it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. I got to tell you, my head trips on that one a little bit. Because the Greek grammar is really interesting there. The image comes to life. And according to the grammar, it's the image of the beast that causes those to be killed who do not worship the beast. That's what the grammar says. Now, it flips back to the second beast in the next verse. So what is this? I'm going to tell you my expert opinion on what this is. It's three words. I don't know. I've heard all kinds of explanations. The one, and it always changes as time goes forward, because that's how these things work. I think it's when you're in it, you'll know it, kind of a thing. So anybody want to guess what the newest interpretation of this one is? AI. Mankind gives AI, birth to AI, and AI is going to determine who lives and who dies. Hey, you know what? But here's what I want to come back to. It's the false religion that creates the image of the beast. It's not the government. It's false religion that creates the image of the beast. It's false religion that gives life to the beast. So that's why I have no idea what this means. Is this a new and living idolatry that sweeps everybody away? Don't know. Like I said, I got a hunch you'll know it when you see it. But one of the things that you notice here is this. And this, because this is actually the power of this image, is right here. Now, go back to verse 15. It was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. This is absolutely conjuring up images of Daniel, well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? They didn't fall down. And Nebuchadnezzar threw them in the furnace to kill them. Now, they didn't die. But he tried to kill them. Let's think about the world today. If there was something that was created, that if you did not participate in it, you would be killed, how much participation would be had for that thing? Quite a bit. You think that may be the principle that God's really trying to get across here? Is that, and you can even see it in during the church age with Catholicism. If you didn't bow the knee to Rome, if you didn't believe what Rome told you to believe, you could be killed. Think about Islam. Islam's the same way. In a lot of ways, you can't even just believe what you want to. You have to believe what they want you to, or else, I mean, the way Islam is codified, if you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and died on the cross and resurrected, you're not allowed to believe that. You're an enemy. So what I'm saying is we see this already and have seen it for a while. The principle, I think, that's being laid out here, don't allow the threat of losing your life to change who you worship. That is a universal principle throughout all of the scriptures that is being shown again here using the imagery of Daniel. Now, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't end up dying for their faith in that furnace. A lot of our brothers and sisters did in the early days of the church. God doesn't promise everybody that he's going to deliver you out of the furnace physically. But I guarantee you, he'll deliver you out of the furnace spiritually. Don't let the threat of consequences change who you worship. That's the thrust, I think, that's given here. And then verse 16. Oh, we'll stop just for a second. Any questions or comments before we move on? Okay. We're going to read 16 through 18 because it's all one section. And he causes all, the small and the great and the rich and the poor and the free men and the slaves, to be given a mark on their right hand and on their forehead. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. Now, what's interesting is the grammar here is the way it's structured is going back to the second beast. And I never noticed this until I was studying this one out. Because, you know, you always, sometimes it's hard to divorce yourself from the premillennial views because it's so prevalent, right? You know, in the movies that are out there, you know, you're going to get an RFID chip in your right hand or some sort of a mark on your forehead, and it's the only way you're going to be able to buy or sell, and that's the way that all this looks. And it's the government that does this. In here, though, it's the second beast that gives the image. It's not the government. The second beast gives the image. So false religion gives you the mark. So we have to ask the question, what's the mark then? Well, remember, the second beast comes up out of the earth, comes up out of this creation. And then in verse 18, it states, here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for their number is that of man. Now, there's no definite article there. So New American Standard has a man. Does ESV or NIV have just man? A man? Is man's? Okay, that's actually not bad. Because that's really the concept. Don't let it go to your head, Brian. Yeah, how about that? Yeah, but you weren't here. You weren't here last week. Oh, yeah, it was bad last week. It was bad last week. So, go back and listen to the tape. but it's man's number. It's man's number, and notice it's on the forehead or on their right hand. Do we see any other marks in the book of Revelation that deal with the forehead? No, I mean in Revelation. Yeah. The seal. Keep reading. Remember, no chapter divisions. Keep reading in 14, verse 1. Then I looked and behold, the Lamb was standing on Mount Zion with him 144,000, having his name and the name of his Father written on their foreheads. Exact juxtaposition to the mark of the beast. I don't think this is a physical mark. It's the, you are marked with one of two faiths. You are marked with the mark of the Father, and you are set free from the destruction that takes place. It harkens back to Ezekiel. Or you have the mark of the false prophet and that of man-made religion. That is of the dragon on your forehead. Now he talks about the fact that no one's able to buy or sell except the ones who have the mark. You know, you can see that in history as well. If you don't toe a certain spiritual line, bad stuff happens to you, like we've talked about. Now, am I saying this can't be something that's going to show itself physically later on, that you have to have a physical mark to buy or sell, and that you have to participate in certain anti-God concepts to be able to do that? I'm not saying that at all. That could absolutely be something, how this manifests. Absolutely possible. I'm not saying it's not. But here's where the deception lies. That someone might think, okay, I get this mark on my hand or my forehead. That means that's the mark of the beast and I belong to the devil. So if I don't get that, that means I belong to God, right? No. Does God just give you his mark on your forehead because you refuse the mark, a physical mark of something else? Like let's say it's an RFID chip in your right hand. And you decide, okay, or someone decides, hey, you know, I'm not gonna get that. Does that mean that they're sealed by God? No. We're sealed by God upon our obedience to the gospel. We're sealed by God by receiving his Holy Spirit. That's why I think it's dangerous to say that this is primarily a physical thing, because people say, oh, if I just don't get that physical thing, then that means I'm okay and I'm going to heaven. No. Three times in Revelation, it talks about the mark of God on the foreheads of his people. Several times in the New Testament talks about how we're sealed with the Holy Spirit. In Ezekiel, before the destroying angel goes out and destroys everybody in Jerusalem, there's an angel with a writing case, and he's told to go and mark the servants of God on their forehead so that they don't get destroyed. The seal determines whether you get destroyed or not. That's the thrust of this. And so when you have three sixes, we're talking about completely and totally you're part of this human man-made false faith. That's my understanding of it. And especially when considering the other aspects of the seals and how they're used, seems like this is primarily a spiritual thing and not primarily a physical thing. Like I said, could it become a physical thing? Yeah, could be. Not an issue. But that's not really the main thrust, I think, of what's going on. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there. We'll pick up with chapter 14. I'm not going to be here next week, but I'll be here the week after. And questions or comments as we wrap up? Oh, hold on. One sec. No. Mike, right?
All right, mine just says in the footnote, one manuscript reads 616.
Yeah, there's a variant there for 616. It's a single variant, I think, or maybe just like a couple. So it's probably just a scribal mess up, which definitely happened. Anything else?